Today's daf is Kiddushin Kafav. We're going to start at the top of the new Mishnah, continuing along the different types of kinyanim for which types of items. Refuah shleima l'dvor batina, ozavram shem ben chana, karmela ben ni'ima, orli pnina b'ar chofrida, chayimak esther bat zipora, daniel ben mir mchay rut, yosef ben rachele, bat rifka, rafa yishof, alek ben bracha batia, yael mir bat chay, rina chay, bat shoshani, yakob ben rozatai, rachel bat tamar sara, alexander zizke ben menucha, lelo nishma chana bat atar, reza bat tar, tzvi hirsh ben yakob halevi umela. Okay, we learned yesterday about the behemot, right? The difference between which animals are acquired with which things, which led us to the question of how do you buy an elephant. So we saw the difference between, right, there was a machloket about it, and the larger animals, the smaller animals, and then we had Rabbi Shimon, who had the unique opinion, which we had to then question, that you have to actually lift the animal, and then how do you lift an elephant. The main thing we said that's going to lead into today is that the behemot are generally acquired the same way that metaltalin are acquired, that they're more similar to metaltalin, which is movable property, which is what we're going to discuss today, land versus movable property, what are the differences between them. And we talked about meshicha and mesira, right, basically handing over an item, or we also talked about pulling an item, right, that you would kind of pull it toward you or bring it into, Mashiach could also be bring it into either a corner in Rashid or a beam that nobody really particularly owns and people don't populate very much, or it could be bringing it into your own property. We didn't really discuss this yesterday, but I just wanted to add that it could be also, you don't actually have to physically touch the animal, but if you get the animal to move into your property or to move into the corner that you're looking for, that would be sufficient. So now the Mishnah is going to talk about nechasim sheyesh lehem achrayut versus nechasim she'ein lehem achrayut. This is a term we're familiar with from before, but I'll repeat it. Yesh lehem achrayut means you have responsibility for them. So for example, if you sell your land and you have a loan out to someone else and you haven't paid back that money yet, and then they come to collect the loan and you don't have anything left and you've sold property in the meantime, so that property still has responsibility of your previous loan on it, even though someone else bought it. And therefore, if we can collect the land from the person who you sold it to. That means it has achrayut, meaning it goes, it almost like it has bag, right? It goes with its own baggage, right? It's got a history to it. Whereas movable property, we don't say the same thing about, okay? That's considered nechasim she'ein lahem achrayut. If you had a phone and you sold it, and now he comes to collect your money and you don't have anything left, so we can't go take your phone away from whoever bought your phone. That's not considered, that doesn't have achrayut. So basically, in other words, we're going to say nechasim she'ein lahem achrayut is karka, and nechasim she'ein lahem achrayut is metaltalin, movable property. So nechasim she'ein lahem achrayut niknim bekesef ubishtar ubachazaka. They're bought in three ways. They're acquired in three ways. Money, a document, or chazaka. Chazaka generally means, although we're going to see later that it could mean something else a little bit, but generally it means that you've gone into the land and you've started working on it, or you built a fence around it, or you locked it, or you did something to the property to show that it was yours. She'ein lahem achrayut, ein niknim ela b'meshicha. Okay, if it doesn't have achrayut, movable property, you can only acquire them by meshicha. Now, this isn't exactly true that you can only acquire them by meshicha, because you can acquire them by chalipin. Okay, but chalipin is something that you can do for all, both land and movable property. You can do chalipin. Remember what that is? That's where you do a symbolic. It's not, we talked about this the other day, that they're talking here about the actual kinyanim that show, there's two types of kinyanim. One is a symbolic act, and one is an act that's actually showing you own it, showing ownership. So we're not, the chalipin is not part of the picture here. First of all, some of the mefreshim say because we're trying to talk about the differences, and there's no difference. Chalipin works for both of them. Or you could say that maybe they're just not talking about the symbolic kinyanim, they're talking about the other type of kinyanim. So if you want to buy movable property, you buy it by meshicha. Again, that means pulling it or putting it in your possession or putting it, bringing it into a corner in Rashid Arabim, but certainly not bring it into, you know, within the other person's property. Now we're going to learn about a kinyan agav. We talked about this before. Nechasim she'ein lahem achrayut niknim im nechasim she'yesh lahem achrayut. B'kesef u'b'shtaru b'chazaka. Now, even though metaltalin can't be bought with kesef, shtaru chazaka, but if you bought land and with it property at the same time, then you could buy, you can use one kinyan of either kesef, shtaru chazaka that worked for the land, and it would include within it the metaltalin that you bought within it. Okay? So that's called a kinyan agav. We're going to talk more about this later. And another thing, if we're already talking about a case where you would have a certain type of nechasim, and another, right, you'd have land and movable property, and generally we wouldn't say, right, what we just said a minute ago was that a kinyan that normally doesn't work for metaltalin would work if you're both combining the metaltalin with karka. If you're buying something bigger, let's say, right, karka is considered a bigger thing, and you're buying it with a kinyan that relates to the karka, and you're buying at the same time metaltalin, so it would work to include it. Likewise, we're going to say something else now. V'zokikina t'nechasim sheyesh l'machriyut lishaba alehen. Okay, what is this? This is something totally different. There's laws of shvua. We learned about moda b'miksad, if you remember in the past. Moda b'miksad is if I say you owe me 100 shekel, and you say it's true I borrowed money from you, but it's I only owe you 50 shekel, or you know I paid you back 50 already, and I only owe you 50. That's called moda b'miksad. You admit to half of it. So now in a case of moda b'miksad, I'm not going to go into all the details. Why I've seen this before, and we'll see it in the future when we learn it directly. The moda b'miksa means, if the halacha is, if you're moda in half, then you have to swear about the rest of it. If you remember, I'll just say very simply, it's because we're concerned that you don't want to lie, so you didn't lie entirely, but you also, what you're really saying is, I just don't want to pay all of it now, I'll pay it later. And you figure down the road, you'll admit the truth and you'll pay it later. So therefore, we're suspect that you're not actually telling the truth and we make you take a shvuah. Now, this only is true in a claim about movable property or money, okay? But it's not true if we have a disagreement about karka, and I say I lent you two fields and you're supposed to return them, and you say you only lent me one, or something like that, right? Some sort of claim about money where a moda b'miksat, you don't take a shvuah. However, what this halacha is telling you, zokikin means we have a case where you're chayav shvua, and we have a case where you're not chayav shvua, and since you're already taking a shvua on one, we're going to make you take a shvua on the other. Okay, that's called a zokikin. Okay, so we're zokikin nechasim sheyesh l'machriyut lishaba alehem. Normally, karka, you don't take a shvua on. But if there's a case where you're moda b'miksad in two cases with the same person, and you need to swear about the metaltalin, then we also make you swear about the karka. Okay? So it's like a flip of the first case. The first case was, we allow the metaltalin to go by the rules of the karka, right? Where if you're doing kinyan, this is the opposite. We're going to have the karka go by the rules of the metaltalin in this case. By the way, there's a whole, we'll get to this when we get to shvuot, but the whole issue of shvuot is that we want to refrain from making shvuot in general. We saw this with the almanah, with the ketubah, that they didn't want to make her swear. We don't like people to take shvuah unnecessarily. We're worried about using Shem Hashem, and they might have a shvuah lashav, and we just don't want to get into things of shvuah. So therefore, there's a lot of cases where we're not machayev a shvuah. But if we're already machayev a shvuah, and you're already swearing, and you're chayev a shvuah on other things that you're not chayev, and often we do the zokikim thing, which is we say, well, you're swearing anyway, so we'll just add things, since we'd rather clarify. It's almost like a polygraph test. You know, we want to check that you're really telling the truth. So shvuah is a good way to do that, to make sure you're really being honest. But again, we don't want you to make a shvuah in too many cases. But if you're already doing it, so you already said Shem Hashem already on one thing, so it's not like you have to take an extra shvuah, you just take a shvuah on the whole thing. Okay, now we're going to try to figure out where we derive, just like we've done all along in this Masechet, where do we know Kesef, where do we know Shtar, where do we know Chazaka from? Bekesef minalan. Amar Chizkiah, Amar Kra, Sadot b'kesef yiknu. Okay, this is a pasuk in Yirmiyahu when it talks about when you go back, he's trying to tell them that there's going to be a time where you're going to go back to the land, and he's saying, Sadot b'kesef yiknu. You're going to buy fields with money. Oh, seems clear. We buy with money. But now they say, wait a minute. What's the next word? V'chatov b'sefer v'chatom. Now, what's the relevance if we can have a kinyan of kesef? What does it mean? It means as soon as you pay the money, there's no going back, right? That property already belongs to the new person. You can't say, oh, I don't want to sell it to you. And the person cannot say, well, I don't really want to buy it from you. Okay, once you hand the money over, it's a done deal. So they say, what do you mean? The pasuk says you'll buy with money and then you'll write it down in a book and sign. So it sounds like what? Ve'ema adi kashtar. Maybe the kinyan isn't a full kinyan until you actually sign. Dichtiv uchtov sefer v'chatom. So now they say, no, Iktiv yiknu libasov kidkamarta. This is like we had the other day, where it depends the order of the words. It says, if it said sadot yiknu bekesef, bechatoba sefer bechatom, then we would have said that. But hashid iktiv, I'm sorry, if yiknu appeared after the shtar, then you would have thought that shtar was ikar. But here, hashid iktiv yiknu meikara, since yiknu appears first, is to teach you the kesef kane and shtar ra'aya ba'almahu. In other words, if they had said uchtova sefer bechatom, and then sadot, uchtova sefer bechatom, uba kesef yiknu, then we'd say the shtar is the ikar. But since the kesef comes first, it shows the kesef is the ikar, and the shtar is not affecting the kinyan. The shtar is just a proof that you've sold it, okay? But it's just a proof, and that the kesef is ikar. So now they're going to say, Amar Rav, Rav says now, Lo shanu, ela b'makom she'en kotvin et hashtar. Ava b'makom she'kotvin et hashtar lo kana. This is only in a place where people generally don't write a shtar. In other words, kesef is kona when it comes to land, only in a place where they don't write a shtar. But in a place where they write a shtar, every time someone sells property, then the shtar, it's not a full kinyan until you have a shtar. So now, obviously, this leads to all sorts of questions when you buy a house. Right? What's the moment that you can't turn back anymore? Right? Generally, in our day, it's signing the contract, right? Which sounds like that's based on the sugya, that until you sign the contract, right, that's the main thing. You could put some money down, but it wouldn't necessarily be mechayev until you sign the shtar, because that's generally what people do. They sign a contract. Now, some people raise the issue about the taboo and whether you have to, when you register in the taboo, what if, in a place where it's nahu, that you always register your house in the taboo, so what if you didn't? Does that indicate, would that mean here would be this shtar, that if you didn't do it, then someone could always claim later that it's not relevant? Okay, so there's a whole little ma'amar in the Marot HaFayomi about it, about the taboo, and whether it's a chovah to basically write it in the taboo, and if you don't, then any side can really go back on it. He in the end claims that not really, okay? He says that the Chazon Ish says that it's enough to sign the contract, and that that's enough of an indicator, and the taboo is a later stage, and it's not necessarily indicative of the sale having gone through or not. I mean, it happens to be in this country. I think some people don't always even register in the taboo, so... I think it's not a good indicator, but it's interesting that they raised the question based on this. Okay?
They don't raise the possibility that maybe they were just recording for what property would revert back at the Yovel to the original Shevet.
In the taboo, you're saying, or in the
Shtar?
No, what?
The Pasuk.
In the Pasuk.
It could have been relevant for those times when property went back to the original.
Whether the Pasuk is relevant for those times or not is almost not relevant, though, because what are they trying to... Well, first of all, you'll see in a minute where they're going to use a different Pasuk to prove Shtar, because this was... Right, we're only talking about Kesef right now, and then how Kesef and Shtar interrelate. Okay? The next time they're going to say is right now they're saying, Uchtova Sefer V'chatom, we don't know what it means. Maybe it means... what they're kind of indicating is it's really just a proof, and it's not affecting the kinyan, because the kinyan is affected by the money, since money comes first in this pasuk. They're going to later use a different pasuk when we want to say that you can acquire land just by shtar alone. Then we're going to find a different pasuk, because this pasuk isn't good. First, they're going to try to bring this one. They're going to say, what do you mean? You just said a minute ago that it's raya ba'alma. It's just a proof, and it's not affecting the kinyan. So basically, what we have is kesef, and then later, what we have that Rav is saying is that kesef is only a valid kinyan in and of itself, in a case where it's not nahug to write with a shtar. Okay, what obviously happened here is the time of the Mishnah, things changed to where Rav was in Bavel, right, even though he was to the generation right after the Tanaim, but he was living in a different country, and probably it was nahug there to write shtarot. And therefore he said, well, kesef is not good enough by itself, you need to have, if people always write a shtar, then again, what does that mean? It means if you put money down on the house and you spend money on it, again, kesef, by the way, means you don't have to pay all the money. If you've just given some money, that's enough to affect the kinyan. But according to Rav, if there's a place where they always write a shtar also and you didn't sign a contract, then you're not chayav. You can, either side can be chozerba. V'i parish, parish. But what does he say? But if you specifically, even if you live in a place where generally they write a shtar, but you specify that this kinyan, that the passing over the money is going to affect the kinyan, then you can override that minha, basically. Ki ha derav avin bar, derav idi bar avin, ki zavin ara amar, when he sold land, he said, yeah. I'm sorry, when he bought land, thank you, when he bought land, he said, ibina bakaspa ikne, ibina bashtara ikne. If I want with money, I'll be kone. If I want with the shtar, I'll be kone. Now, what does this mean exactly? So what he obviously meant was to protect himself and not the other side. This is the way they understand it. Ibeina bakaspa ikne di beitu lemehadar lo matzitu. If we want, we can say that the kesef was machne, meaning if I put money down already, then and they wanted, ibeitu means if they wanted to be chosrobo, the other side, lo matzitu, they can't. Lo matzitu hadritu, they can't go back on themselves. The ibeina b'shtara ikne, di ibeina lemehadar hadranabi. And if I want, I'll say b'shtar, meaning that if I gave money, but I didn't yet sign a contract, then if I want to be chozerbo, I can be chozerbo. Now, how he was able to do this, that both went to his advantage, is a good question. But the point is, I guess that he was specifying, and I guess they agreed to it, that he would be the one who, you know, had the advantage on both sides. But what do you see here? You see here that you can specify against the general practice. As long as you specify, and that was agreed upon, then it'll work. Okay, ubishtar menalan. Where do we learn bishtar? Ilem amishum dichtiv. If you want to say, because it says uchtov sefer v'chatom va'ed edim. That's the continuation of the pasuk, right? And witnesses will testify. V'hamarta shtar ra'ev almuhu. Didn't we just say it's just a proof, not affecting the kinyan? Elamehacha, the beginning of that parak starts. If you remember, Yirmiyahu buys this land from Hanamel. I think is how you pronounce it. His uncle. He buys this land. So there, when he buys the land, it says, Be'ekach et sefer hamikneh. Okay, so here you see, he takes the shtar, right? He says, I'll take the sefer hamikneh, which is a shtar. So we learn from there that he bought this land using a shtar. So therefore, that can also affect a kinyan. Amar Shmuel, now Shmuel says something very interesting, which basically puts this halacha somewhat to the side a little bit. Lo shanu ela b'shtar matana, aval b'mecher lo kana ad shi'itein lo damim. He says, this is all only true that if you only had a shtar, it would be kone, is only true with a matana, where there is no money, passing hands. But if you're selling land, rather than giving it as a gift, then just a shtar alone is not enough. There has to be money handed over, which also sounds like what we do, right? At a closing, generally, what do? You sign a contract and you hand over money. Okay? Mativ Rav Hamnuna. Rav Hamnuna now asks a question on Shmuel. Bishtar ketzad, how do you do a shtar? Katav lo alaniyar o alacheres, afal pi she'em behem sheva pruta. Remember, we saw this before also, that if you write, how does the shtar work? You write on a piece of paper or on a piece of pottery.
Sure.
Thank you, pottery, like a shard of pottery. And even though they themselves are not worth anything, right, when it's money, we saw this with the marriage, right, when it's money, has to be something worth, something of value. But if it's a shtar, it doesn't have to have value. What do you write on it? Okay, this is again, bishtar ketzad, they're explaining, how do you do a kinyan with a shtar? And this is going to contradict Shmuel, who said that when you do kinyan with shtar, we're only talking about matana, right? What does he say? How do you do a kinyan with shtar? What does the source say? Sadi mechura lecha, sadi netuna lecha, harezo mechura. Whether you say, my field is sold to you, which indicates that what? That's how you do a kinyan with shtar for a sale. And Shmuel said it doesn't work for a sale. Sadina tunalacha, that would be a gift. Harezo mechura unetuna. Okay, so it's either sold or given as a gift. So now you say, how could you say then that you also need money? It doesn't say that here. And it seems clear they're talking about a sale. So Rav Hamnuna asked this question and he now answers it. Hu motiv la v'hu mefarik la, right? It's hard to say Rav Hamnuna's name without thinking about the cold fish right from yesterday. He answered the question and he now answers it. B'mocher sadehu mipnei ra'ata. This is a case, a normal, with the case that they're talking about now, right? Again, this is a little hard to say that that's really what the Braita was talking about when it said it very, very broadly without specifying that. But what does it say? He's saying that when it said Bishtar Ketzad, how do you do this? And it's talking about a sale. It's talking about a sale of someone who wanted to get rid of a sale of his property quickly because it wasn't such great property. And therefore, he was willing. In other words, the whole thing is, when he writes the shtar and gives it, what happens with the shtar? You write, Sadi Mechuralecha, and you hand it over to the person who's buying it. So now when you hand over the contract, in this case where your sadeh is not a good field, you're very much wanting to close the deal, because if you don't close the deal, the guy might realize that this isn't the greatest property and change his mind about it. So, or maybe he realizes it's not a great property, but he's willing to buy it anyway, but you're worried, maybe he's going to change his mind and say, you know what, I'd rather buy better property. So, in that case, he's very much wanting to get rid of his field, and he's willing to be machne the field with a shtar alone without getting the money. But in a regular case, and this all, again, it goes against what the sources say, because the sources seem very clear that they're general, but what's it's agreeing with? It's agreeing with logic. In other words, logic would state that when a person signs a contract, they're not necessarily willing to give it up until the guy puts money down. So therefore, there's logic to be saying what he's saying. Whereas only in a case where you're selling mipnei rata would you be willing. Rav Ashi amar b'matana b'kesh litnalo. Rav Ashi says very simply, no, it's not talking about a mocher sadeh mipnei rata. It's not actually talking about mocher sadeh at all. Even though it says sadeh mechura lecha, it's really talking about b'matana. V'lama katav lo lashon mecher. So then why does it say lashon mecher? Kedei liyapot et kocho. This case, it was a gift. Now, in general, when you give a gift, and then what happens? If I have land and I took out a loan, what did we say about my land? It's yesh lehem achrayu. So if I took out a loan, I now gave you this land as a gift. Comes the person, my malveh, he comes and takes, right, comes to me, I have no money. So he goes and seizes the land from the guy who had the matana. Now, if it was a sale, what would happen? I, as the loveh, would eventually be responsible. I'd have to pay the guy back because the land got taken. In other words, the malveh can go straight to him. He doesn't have to go through me. He can go straight to him and take the land back. But I, in the end, have to, again, it has achrayut. I have to take the achrayut for the fact that I sold you this land and give you the money back. But if I gave it to you as a matana, I don't have any achrayut. I just gave you a gift. So in the end, you lost your gift. Too bad. But in this case, he says, sadi mechura lecha, he's giving him a gift, but he says, I'm giving you a gift at the level of a sale. Meaning, I'm giving you a gift with achrayut. So that if somebody takes the land from you, I will pay you back the value of it. Okay, that's liyapot et kocho, to give him more strength, to give the guy who got the gift more strength. Again, it's difficult to say this because it's probably not a very common case that people would give a gift with achrayut. Why would they do that, right? Okay, so now we've learned the source for kesef, from sadot b'kesef yiknu, and then with the caveat that maybe it's only once, you know, in a place where they don't write shtarot. Okay. Then we had the shtar case where we also said it's really only in a case where you gave money. Okay. Only in a gift case would it work without giving money, because obviously there is no money handed over. Ubechazaka. Now we want to get to chazaka. Minalam. Where do we learn that from? Amar Chizki Amar Kra. B'shavu ba'arechem asher tafastem. Okay. This is a pasuk from Yirmiyahu. Also interesting that all these pasuk come from Yirmiyahu. Sorry, it's Ushvu ba'arechem. And you should sit in the cities that you conquered. Bametafastem. So now they say, so what do we learn from this pasuk? How did you tofesotam? B'yeshiva. In other words, shvu means you settle. Now remember what I said before. Generally, what do we say chazaka is? You work the land, you put a barrier around it, you lock it, you know, you put a key, something. Here it sounds like just sitting in the land is chazaka. And it happens to be that, we can learn from here also, but it happens to be that that's another type of chazaka. Just living in the land is also a type of chazaka. So that's what they're talking about here, and that's where they learn it from. Debe Rabbi Yishmael Tana, v'yarashtem ota v'yashavtem ba. Okay, also it says, right, you're yoresh, and you settled in it. Bameh yarashtem v'yishiva. Okay, that's how they connect the two words in the pasuk. How are you yoresh? By settling. Right, because the point with the settling chazakah is that if you settle there and no one's complaining and nobody's kicking you out of there, right, then it must mean that it's yours. V'she'en lehem achrayut, ein niknim ela b'meshicha. Okay, so now we're going to talk about metaltanin. Minanan. Dichtiv, ki timkerumem karlamitecha, O kano miyad amitecha. We saw this pasuk before. What did we say? O kano miyad amitecha is davar hanikne miyad liyad. It must be something that's passed from hand to hand. And not only does it show us that that's metaltalim, but it shows us even more. How are metaltalim acquired? Miyad liyad b'mashicha, right? You taking it from the hand to the other, right? Sort it's also sort of, it sounds like mesira, where one hand's to the other, but even just taking it, that you take it in your hand. Miyad amitecha. Ula Rabbi Yochanan ta'amar dvar Torah ma'ot konot ma'ika lememar. According to Rabbi Yochanan, kesef is kona by metaltalim. Okay? Mida oraita. Not mida rabbanan. Okay, because what did you see here? Kesef is not mentioned by metaltalim, right? So now, according to Rabbi Yochanan, there's a machloka Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish. Rish Lakish says kesef is not kona mida oraita. Rabbi Yochanan says mida oraita. Ma'ot can be kone metaltalin. However, the rabbis decree that that's not good. Okay? There's a gzera chachamim, the kesef doesn't work. What's the logic? The logic is very simple. If I give you money to buy something, and it's still in your property, what happens if a fire breaks out in your house? You're going to try to, what are you going to do? You're going to immediately try to grab whatever you can. My stuff, you're going to say, hey, well, that already belongs to someone else, so who cares? So you're going to leave that guy's stuff, and it's going to go burn. So basically, in order to avoid that kind of situation where he'll say, well, it's in my property, but I don't really care about what happens to it. So in order to avoid that, we say that money isn't kone, meaning I might have paid you for it, but if it's still in your house, you're 100% responsible. They belong to you right now. So if something happens to them, you'll have to provide me with new ones. Okay? And that's to avoid my being lax about... It all goes to the property laws that we've been learning in the Bava Metzia class, right? About responsibility for other people's property. So, because of that, they were mitakemi de rabbanan that you would need to do meshicha and actually take them into your possession to be kone. So, according to Rabbi Yochanan, who said ma'ok konot, so here it seems from the pasuk, right, that that... And it seems from here, the Tana is saying, but what about Kesef? So now what do they say? Tana takanta derabanan katane. In other words, when they said, which actually makes a lot of sense, I'm not really sure the question is such a great question, because when it says, nechasim she'en lemachroyu nikneem, ein nikneem ela b'mashicha, they're talking about midorabanan. In other words, once the rabbis were mitaken, well, then it can only be acquired by mashicha. Only midoraita, Kesef would work, but midorabanan, they already overrode that, and therefore the Tana is talking only on a derabanan level. Which would make sense, because the Mishnah in general is talking on a practical level, and the practical level is the Takana Rabbana. Nechasim she'en lehem achrayu, minane mile. Okay, so now where do we learn about this kinyan agav? Okay, I want to just give two categories right now to understand before we start. There's kinyan agav, and there's kinyan chatzer. Kinyan chatzer is when I buy a field, let's say, so I can acquire metaltalin that are in that field. Now, there's a whole big machloket about how kinyan chatzer works. Whether it works, it means I acquire anything that was in that field before I bought it, so I buy it. We saw this before, by the way, with the get, let's say, if the get, right, if she now acquires this property and the get was in their property already, is that considered it's in her property? So there's a machloket about whether a kinyan chatzer works. Let's say I buy a house, and in the house they left some furniture. So as soon as I buy the house, so the furniture becomes mine. That you could call a kinyan chatzer. Some people say no. A kinyan chatzer doesn't apply to anything that was in the property when I acquired the property. When I acquired the property, I just acquired the property. But kinyan chatzer is if I then put something into that property, since that property is now considered mine, anything I put in that property, I automatically acquire because I put it in the property. That's like mashicha, basically, right? If you put something into your property, that's a kinyan. So maybe that's kinyan chatzer, that if you put in your chatzer, it's also yours. Then there's what's called kinyan agav, which is, I intend to purchase things at the same time, okay? I basically say, I'm buying this field from you, and I'm buying other property from you, and I do a kinyan that, according to the Mishnah, right, a kesef, shtar, or chazaka, on the land. With that, I can acquire the metaltalin that I was also acquiring at the same time, right? They can be considered mine. So now there's going to be a question about this kinyan agav in a few minutes, but that's just the background. So first they say, minane mile. Amar chizkiah de amar kra, the pasuk says, vayitain lahem, this is about Yehoshaphat, the king Yehoshaphat, it comes up in Divrei Hayamim, vayitain lahem avihem matanot, Okay, I'll read the whole pasuk here. It doesn't give you the whole pasuk. V'yitein lam aviyam matanot rabo, l'kesef u'lizahav u'lemigdanot, im arei mitzurot b'Yehuda. Because it says, im arei mitzurot, with cities, okay? It doesn't say N cities. If it said N cities, then we consider all these things different. But because it says he gave them these matanot with the cities, we assume that when they acquired the cities, they acquired the matanot also. So now, Ibailhu. Here's the big question that relates to what I was talking about before. Be'inan svurin olo. When you do this kinyan agav, do you have to have them in the karka itself? Okay? In other words, do we say this kinyan agav only works if the metalclin are in the karka that we're acquiring? Or, do we say no? Because I'm doing a sale with you, you know, I'm purchasing something from you, and we're talking about this and we're talking about that, so they don't necessarily have to be together. It's just that while I'm acquiring this, I'll acquire that with the shtar or the chazaka or the kesef that I'm acquiring the lamb with. Together, I can acquire the other things that we discussed. So that's going to take us till the end of the daf and into tomorrow's daf. We're going to try to find proofs. By the end of today, we still aren't going to have any conclusive proofs. We're going to bring sources and in the end say that you can't necessarily prove from here. Tashma, let's learn it from here. Rabbi Akiva Omer, karka kol shehu, chayevet v'pe'ah u'bebikurim. Okay, before we turn the page, let's just finish this. Rabbi Akiva says that if you have any sort of small amount of karka, any sort of land already makes you chayev in pe'ah. Okay, how exactly are you going to take a teeny plot of land and leave pe'ah? But I guess, you know, a small amount. The pe'ah is the corner of your field that you have to leave for the poor people. Or bikurim, if you already have a very teeny bit of land and on that is growing fruits from the shivana minim, you have to bring bikurim from there. Ulichtov ala pruzbol, we learned this in Gitin, that in order to write a shtar pruzbol, which what does it do, right? It allows the chov not to be canceled. If you give out a loan, generally the Shemitah year will come and cancel your loan. If you write a shtar pruzbol at the end of the Shemitah year, that means that basically you're kind of handing it over to the jurisdiction of the Beit Din, and the Beit Din laws of cancellation of halva'ot debts don't apply, and their loans don't apply, and therefore you can write a pruzbol, but there's a halacha, the pruzbol was a takana that they made for a regular general case. And a general case is a case where the lova has land. And therefore, only if the lova has land can you write a shtar pruzbol. But if the lova had no land, then you can't write a shtar pruzbol. Now, if you remember, we learned about this. If you didn't have land, sometimes in order to be able to write a shtar pruzbol, you would be able to maknehim, even karka kol shehu. If you remember this, now it's going to connect, because that's what we said. As long as he has even a teeny bit of land, that's already considered that he's a landowner. Okay, so therefore there were cases where the guy would say, okay, listen, I'm giving you this teeny bit of land, this is going to be yours, and then, now I can write a shtar pruzbol on it. Okay, and the last thing is our issue, which is, even karka kol shehu, remember, that's what we were talking about, a little bit of land, you could be liknoti manachasim she'en lehem achrayut. Okay, you could buy metaltalim with these, you could do a kinyan agav, even if you're buying a very, very small piece of land. So now what's going to be the obvious? If you need the nechasim to be on the land, well, right? What kind of items can you put on a teeny piece of land? So, of course, this is the Gemara. They're going to obviously come up with a case. Tiruguma. Okay, so right now they're trying to prove it must be you need svurin. Now they're going to, in the end, say you don't need svurin because we'll find a case where you can actually put something teeny metaltalin on karka kol shehu. Tir Gemara Rav Shmuel Bar Bisna, Kamed Rav Yosef. He explained in front of Rav Yosef, Kegon Shana Atzva Machat. You sold him a needle. Okay, so you stuck the needle into the land. Obviously, it's teeny, and you can fit the needle. So now you're going to like this one. Amar Rav Yosef, Kavastan. I don't know exactly how to pronounce it. Kavastan, something like that. Kavastan. So what does Kavastan mean? Okay, we'll give two explanations. One is you disgust me. Okay, which is based on the root Kuf bet samach, which means, you're going to love this one, it's to gorge on food to the point of vomiting. So he's basically saying, oh my God, you disgust me, I'm going to vomit. Okay, sounds like something one of your kids would say, right? So disgusting. Okay, or he's saying, okay, the Koran said the Greek etymology, there's Greek etymology here, and it's someone who has his head down. Okay, and then maybe it means someone who says things that are, you know, totally off the wall or something like that. So he basically says, what are you talking about? Ichapal Tana Lashmuina Machat? The Tana's going to bother himself to bring in this case for a needle? Give me a break. You know, the Mishnah, this is, right, normally you don't see this. Sometimes we have these outlandish, you know, ukimtas to the Mishnah. Oh, it's only talking about some very rare case. So, and we say, what are you talking about? So that's exactly what he's saying. What are you talking about? The Tana's going to bother himself to talk about a case of a machat? Someone buying a needle? Give me a break. So here comes the good answer. Amar Rav Ashi, Man le malan, who's to say, de lo tala ba marganita, de shavi alfe zuze. It could be he stuck a machat, and in the machat he threaded a pearl or some sort of jewel that was worth thousands of dinarim. And there you have your case where it was karka kolshu, he sold him something that was worth something, and then at least you could say, well, the Mishnah was talking about a case like that, and that's his answer. Okay, so again, whether or not the source was talking about that or not is not relevant. The point is that we can't prove from it anything, because it could be that there's a case where it's even karka kolshu and the metaltalin are tzvurin, they're collected on the other, put on the land itself. Next case. Tashma, Amar Rabbi Elazar, Ma'aseh b'midoni echad, shaya b'Yerushalayim, shayu lo metaltalin harbe. Okay, here's a guy from Madon, it's a city, that he was in Yerushalayim and he had a lot of metaltalin. Ubikesh litnam b'matana, and he wanted to give them as a gift. Amrulo, ein lo takana ad sheiknem al gabei karka. They said there's only one way you can do this, and that's by using a kinyan agav, okay, by karka. So masa, so what did he do? Halach v'lakach beit sela samuch liYerushalayim. He took a plot of land that was, he went and bought a plot of land that was the size of a sela, okay, a decent sized plot, near Yerushalayim. Va'amar, Sfoni ze leploni. I'm giving this little northern part of it, okay, a small amount, to so and so. You know, I'm going to be maknehim this land, okay. Ve'imo me'atzon u'me'achaviyot. And with this, I'm going to give him 100 son and 100 chaviot, which is a very large amount of things, right? Think about 100 son are not going to fit into this little corner of this piece of land, okay? And then what happened? Umet, and then he died without having done, right, a proper kinyan on the metaltalin themselves, but he did a kinyan on the land. V'kimu et varav. And they said, all that stuff is acquired by the other guy. V'i amar b'inan tzvurin. If you need it, if they say that they needed to be collected onto the land itself, Beit Sela l'may chazeh, right? In other words, you're never going to fit it on the right. 1 second, the Beit Sela here. I was confusing it with the next case. Beit Sela. I'm sorry, I said it wrong. Beit Sela. What they assume right now is that it's like the size of a madbea of a sela. Okay, that's the size of a coin. In other words, it was a teeny plot of land, and we said this northern part of the land is going to be for this guy. Okay, and obviously you couldn't fit all that stuff. So now they say, so if so, Beit Sela l'maychazeh, right? You couldn't possibly put all the property on here. So now they say, Misvarad Beit Sela Sela Mamash. Who's to say that a Beit Sela means the size of the madbeah of a Sela? No, my Sela d'nafish tshuva. It was actually a big plot of land. Okay, it was a large size plot of land. My karule sela, so why did they call it a sela? Now, sela also means a rock. Dekashe kesela, because it was hard as a rock. Mm-hmm. Meaning he was selling him land that was inferior quality land because you couldn't plant on it. A big plot of inferior quality land, but he sold him this large spot of land. And he sold it for cheap because it was poor land. But then he was able to... What was the point? Why would he sell him a lot of land, right? He was just trying to give him the land to be able to do the kinyan on the metaltalin. So we gave him this big plot of land that he didn't really need, and he said, and put all the animals in there, and then they'll be acquired to this guy. Okay. So again, you can't necessarily prove anything. Next case. Tashma de'amar Rav Yehuda amar Rav. Ma'aseh ba'adam chad shechala b'Yerushalayim. A guy was sick in Yerushalayim. Ki Rabbi Eliezer. Okay. There's two versions of the story. Either he was sick, and this follows the Shita of Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Elazar. It's a mistake here, Rabbi Eliezer. It's Rabbi Elazar. There's a machloket Tana Chachamim and Rabbi Elazar about, we've seen this before, Divrei Shechiv Meira. If you're on your deathbed, and you say, I want to give this land to so-and-so, does it work, or does it not work, right? Do we say it's Kiktuvim Uchim Mesurin Dami? It's as if you wrote a star and handed it over. Or do we say that unless you do a kinyan, it doesn't work? So, this story is either about a chole, according to Rabbi Elazar, who holds that it's not kiktuvim u'kumasurim, you actually need a kinyan, The Amrilan, other people say it was Babari Haya. It was a guy who was healthy, and then you'll see he drops dead at the end of the story, but he was healthy and then just all of a sudden dropped dead. Okay? And Kirabanan. In other words, if he was a Shechiv Meirah, according to Rabbanan, it would be fine even without a Kinyan. So as we're trying to say that the story happened in a way that you would actually need a Kinyan, and then we're going to see that the Kinyan happened through a Kinyan Agav. Okay? Because if you didn't need a Kinyan, because you'd say Dibre Shechiv Meirah, Kachetuv Masurim Dami, you wouldn't even need a Kinyan, and for sure it would be his, and then it wouldn't prove anything. So they say, either one version is it was Rabbi Elazar and he was sick, or he was a Bari. Shayula Metaltalin Harbe. He had a lot of Metaltalin, Ubikeshli Tanam B'Matana, and he wanted to give them as a gift. Amrulo, Ein Lo Takana Ad Sheiknem Agabe Karka. Okay, the only way you can do this is if you do this Kinyan Agav on the land. Ma'asa, Halach V'Lakach Beit Rova, Samuch L'Yerushalayim. He went and took, that's where I got confused, the Beit Sela was the small amount. Here he took a Beit Rova, which is the amount of land that you could... that you could plant a quarter of a kav of produce. That's why it's called a rova. A quarter of a kav of produce. A kav is a certain measurement. And according to the Mefarshim, there's always different opinions about shiurim. One says it's 24 square meters. One says it's 35 square meters. Okay, decent plot of land. Not huge, but not teeny. Small for a plot of land. He took a Beit Rova Samuch L'Yerushalayim. That is, he acquired this land. Vamar Tefach al tefach leploni. He says, of this land that I just acquired, I'm going to give one tefach by one tefach, okay, one square tefach, to so-and-so, right? So the guy he wanted to give this land, the gifts to. V'imo me'atzon u'me'achaveyot. V'umet. Okay, first of all, it's interesting that it sounds very much like the last story. It's the exact same amount of stuff. Whether all these stories were actually true or they were passed, right, maybe they're all coming for the same type of story, different versions of it, unclear. Anyway, he had this me'atzo me'achaviyot, and then umet, and then he died. V'kimu chachamim etvarav. Okay, and they said, okay, whatever he said was good. So remember, if he was sick and it was according to Rabbi Elazar, we don't say kichtu mechusum redami. And if he was well, then we certainly don't say that. So why did they accept this? Because it must have been this Kinyan Agav worked. So again, what would you prove from here? Iamar b'inan sfurim tefach al tefach l'may chaze. Right? You can't possibly put all that stuff in a tefach on tefach of space. So what did they answer? No, you could say hacha b'mayas kinan l'dame. Maybe he was giving him money of the value to buy all this stuff. It's a little tough because it does say he had a lot of metaltalin. It makes it sound like he was giving away his metaltalin. But they want to say, maybe you could read it that it was actually money, and money in that amount you could fit on a tefach on a tefach. Hachinami mistabra. It's also logical because why? Now, if you've paid attention to the story, there's something strange about the story and the previous story, which is, why was the only way for this to happen was to buy a karka? Why couldn't he do a kinyan chalipin? In other words, we assume, okay, we're going to ask later also, why couldn't he do a kinyan mesira or a meshicha? You know, what was going on here? So they say, Hachinam Mistabra, it also makes sense to say he was giving money. If he was giving them, right, in actuality, he could have done a kinyan chalipin, a symbolic kinyan with the guy, and he would have acquired it. So ve'elamai, so it must be l'dame, but wait, now they're going to say no. If you're going to say that that proves that it was dame because you could have bought it b'chalipin, we could say otherwise. L'dame, right, elamai l'dame, nikninu nilei b'mashicha. Ela, in other words, if it was money, you could have also acquired it b'mashicha. And if that's the case, it must be you couldn't have acquired it b'mashicha. Why? Ela deleite l'makaba matana. It must be that none of these other kinyanim worked because the guy wasn't there. So hachanami, you could say the same thing, that maybe it really was that he had the actual physical things, but couldn't be maknedem to the other guy b'mashicha because deleite l'makaba matana, because the guy wasn't there. In other words, he wants to give a gift to someone, but the guy physically isn't there, so there's no way to give it to him either by chalipin or b'mashicha, in which case you can't necessarily say that we can prove that it's dame because he could have done chalipin instead. They say, no, he could have done mashicha when it came to the, you know, he could have done it for any of them, right? He could have done mashicha, chalipin, even if they were there. So now they say, what do you mean he could have done it, even if the guy wasn't, and it's obviously the guy wasn't there, and that's why he had to do this kinyan agav. There's still other alternatives. Binazkinu niyale agav acher. He could give it to someone else with mashicha, and that person could be zochah. Remember, zachin la'adam shelo b'fanav. That person could have done the kinyan for him. So what do they say? No, why didn't he want to do it b'mashicha with somebody else? Because lo samcha da'ate. He didn't trust the guy. Savar shamit va'achalehu. In other words, right? You want to give a gift to someone. You don't always want to give it through a middleman because that person might just pocket the stuff himself, right? Whether it's the money or whether it's the, right? If it's the actual objects, which is really what we're up to now, right? He was worried the guy would take it himself. So ela my ein lo takana. So then why does it say ein lo takana? Right? Ein lo takana doesn't mean... Ein lo takana means he had no other choice. But what do you mean? He had a choice. Could have given it to someone, he just didn't want to. Right? Remember, that's what we're up to. We're saying that the reason he didn't do it for Mashiach was he didn't trust the other guy. But it doesn't mean there's no takana. He could have given it to the other guy. So hachi kamar. Lamai de lo sam chedate, ein lo takana ad shiknei magabe karka. What it means to say is that someone who doesn't trust a middleman has no choice but to do it with kinyan karka. Kinyan, right? The kinyan karka, the kinyan agav. Okay, so therefore in the end we prove that this doesn't prove anything because it could be that it was metaltalin and it could be, in other words, we don't know whether they were tsvurin, whether you need tsvurin or not because we don't know was it metaltalin or was it money. Either is an option. In other words, either it was money and it was tsvurin and then it would prove that you need tsvurin, or it could have been metaltalin and he used this kinyan agav even without tsvurin. So we don't really know which one it was and therefore we can't prove from here anything. Okay, tomorrow we'll see more attempts to prove.